You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
China and Australia are in a nasty diplomatic fight that erupted this week over a tweet. But the spat actually goes a lot deeper than that and involves alleged war crimes that Australian special forces committed in Afghanistan. It involves China's mishandling of the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, a trade fight, and a lot more. That's today on Worldly, part of the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Jen Williams, here as always with Alex Ward and Jen Kirby.
What's up?
Hello.
We are here post-Thanksgiving. I am stuffed and tired of eating turkey. I hope you guys had good Thanksgivings.
Mine was pretty low-key per public health recommendation.
Alex?
We just finished the pot roast that I made, and it was very, very good. Although pot roast after like 7 straight days was a bit of a nightmare, but it was all right.
You didn't have turkey?
No, turkey's terrible and gross and dry and horrible.
Oh, this that might be because you're a bad cook.
It could be. No, I'm a really good cook, actually.
Are you?
Just turkey's like the worst of the meats.
Yeah. I agree, but I'm a traditionalist, and so I make sure we have turkey on Thanksgiving.
My roommate loves to cook and went a little stir crazy because of the pandemic and ended up making not one, but 2 main dishes. So he made turkey and pulled pork and 10 side dishes, 2 pies. He went out of control. So yeah, we have a lot of leftovers in the fridge. So
I will say, though, even though I think your traditionalist views on Thanksgiving are wrong, and this is coming from the person from Massachusetts, so I have ultimate authority on Thanksgiving. I will say that Christine absolutely crushed the pie game with an excellent pecan and apple pie. So they were 2 separate pies.
Nice.
And they were incredible. And it's why I had to like run multiple miles and like basically go on a fast in order to fit in this chair.
Yeah.
My post-Thanksgiving strategy is to eat the pie for breakfast as a meal. So that way you don't have like an additional meal. You just have like the sugar for breakfast.
That's smart.
And then that's how you take care of it.
That's smart. I'm going to do that because there's a pumpkin pie slice waiting for me with my name on it. And I've been like holding off because I'm like, I'm going to have to ride my bike for so many hours to make that go away. But that's a good strategy. I'm having it for breakfast tomorrow. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. So
makes China feel somewhat better.
Yeah. All right, so China and Australia. Alex, you just wrote a really great piece for the site on this, so I'm going to start with you. What's going on? What happened here? Start with this week.
Okay, so a really odd thing. A Chinese foreign ministry official, a guy named Zhao Lijian, is kind of a Twitter troll. Let's be clear. This is a guy who loves to provoke adversaries online, call them names, say how great China is, how bad others are. And one thing he did on Sunday was to tweet out a computer-generated image. It is a fake image, but what it is of a Australian soldier with a knife up to a young Afghan's throat. And this young Afghan child is covered, or at least the face is covered in the Australian flag. And underneath is a caption that basically says, "Don't panic, we're here to help." It's gruesome. It's awful. And I totally get why you might be going, wait, why would a Chinese diplomatic spokesperson/Twitter troll put out such a weird thing? Well, the image was created by a Chinese nationalist artist, and it was done in reference to a report that came out in November, which basically alleged war crimes from elite Australian forces when they were serving in Afghanistan. And I know we'll talk about more of it later, but all you need to know at the start here is what that major report said, and it was part of a four-year-long inquiry.
In Australia, right? Not in China.
Correct, in Australia, yeah. In Australia, what that basically said was that, more than 20 members had killed, 39 innocent Afghans outside of the heat of battle, and in pretty, grisly ways, including a culture, what was known as blooding, where senior officers would prompt junior officers to kill prisoners, as sort of an initiation and hazing. Again, we'll get more into it, but that was basically it. And when that report came out last month, it didn't make much global news, but Australia responded to Zhao's tweet, basically calling on China to apologize, etc. And now it's a bigger global story because Australia took the troll's bait.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you have, because I remember when I first saw this, I was like, wait, why is this guy like randomly tweeting out this thing about Afghanistan? So there's this report that came out. And like you said, it made a lot of shockwaves, in Australia itself, but kind of beyond like the shores of Australia, didn't get a ton of coverage. To be fair, there's a lot of stuff going on around the world, of course, but, war crimes in Afghanistan is kind of a huge deal. Then China decided to troll them and tweet that out. All right. So why, besides the fact that this report exists and it came out, also it came out in November. So what prompted this Chinese diplomat to do this? Why did he do that? What prompted this?
Well, the simple answer is troll's gonna troll. The longer answer, the longer answer is that Australia and China have actually been in a years-long spat, and it effectively starts, as China has become more aggressive and assertive, both politically and militarily, in the Asia-Pacific region. Australia is a major player, but of course, China is one too, and so that was sort of a longer-term thing. But in 2017, you had Australia ban all foreign donations to political campaigns to Australian politicians because there was news that China was trying to influence the nation's political process. So, just think about how in the U.S. we think, we thought about like interference in our elections, right? Australia saw these news reports as, well, wait, China's trying to send money to political campaigns and other organizations in order to influence the outcome of our elections. And so they banned all foreign donations. It was aimed towards China. And China was pretty mad about that. And making matters worse, if you're in Beijing, was in 2018, Australia was the first country to block Huawei and ZTE, major Chinese telecommunications firms, from being a part of Australia's 5G network. And it got worse this year. After the coronavirus, Australia asked for an investigation into the origins and China's handling of the early days. We know, at least as of now, that the coronavirus started in Wuhan, a city in China, and that Beijing obfuscated any information and sort of, how this came about. And so they started a trade war with China imposing tariffs on like barley and increasing, the tariffs on Australian wine by 200%, like 200, which is an insane amount. So if you're
that's a large number of percents.
Yeah. So if you're a fan of yellowtail wine, I have bad news for you. If you're living in China, I guess. And so there you go. Like this has just been a larger fight happening. This Afghanistan war, like if you're China and you've been having this back and forth with Australia, well, this report gives you a lot of ammunition, right? Which takes me back to the initial of like, what is the answer? Troll's going to troll. A troll found something on which to hit Australia and did. And the Australian government fought back saying like, hey, you shouldn't have said that and you should apologize.
Yeah, I think too, another thing maybe to keep in mind is that, Australia, some of their, researchers there have been at the forefront of kind of uncovering some of the egregious human rights violations in Xinjiang against the Uyghurs. And, Australia has been out front in terms of criticizing the treatment of the Uyghurs in that region. And so this war crimes report gives China an opportunity to kind of draw a false equivalence and to deflect from their own, misdeeds, I suppose. And one thing we tend to know about Chinese propaganda is it's as much for a lot of outsiders think it seems really clumsy and bad, and that's because it is. But sometimes the audience is as much for the internal Chinese audience or Chinese people living abroad. And so that's a really important strategy there as well.
Yeah, I think so. That's like a really important issue I kind of want to drill down on here is, you know, this false equivalency or, you know, basically, I think, Alex, as you put it in your piece, it's a bit rich that China would be, you know, calling out another country for human rights violations. You know, to be clear, like, this is, you know, the allegations of what these special forces, you know, soldiers did in Afghanistan are really horrific. You know, there was another report Guardian Australia came out with this week showing this really gruesome photo of Australian soldiers drinking at a military bar in Afghanistan, you know, drinking beer out of the prosthetic leg of a dead Taliban soldier, which is just gruesome and horrifying. And there are several photos of them kind of like posing with it and dancing and laughing. And that wasn't Chinese propaganda, right? Like that wasn't a doctored image. That's a real photo. So, you know, even though the Chinese tweet was fake and was this computer generated image, you know, the crimes that they talk about, you know, that they were kind of pointing to, alleged crimes, these people haven't faced a court of law yet, I believe. But, you know, they're real incidents that they're referring to. But at the same time, like, it's China, and they're literally, as you alluded to, Jen, you know, locking up thousands of Uyghur Muslims in literal concentration camps. And that's just, you know, one of the human rights abuses that China engages in among many. So, you know, I think it's really interesting that China decided to use this as like a cudgel against the West. But it definitely fits this kind of model of like, you guys do it worse than we, you know, how dare you, you know, what gives you the right? You're just as bad, all of that. And it kind of, you know, in some ways they have a point in the sense that like, you're not innocent, Australia. You're not innocent, you know, Western countries. You do these things too. You know, we were talking about this before the show. I would probably say, you know, for me, you know, like, yes, they have a point. But I think there's also the fact that, like, this report exists, right? Like, the Australian government, like, commissioned this, like, four-year-long inquiry into what Australian soldiers did in Afghanistan and published these results. And publish this whole report. And so, like, the fact that, like, you wouldn't have that in China, right? You're not going to have the Beijing government, you know, launching a four-year-long inquiry into what they're doing in Xinjiang, right? Like,
right.
They're actively hiding it and lying about it. So I will say, you know, at least democracy's got that going for it. You know, I guess that's me.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would also say, too, that, you know, this gives China, we know that China has, you know, wants to have a bigger global presence, right? And is trying to build relationships in places like Latin America and Africa. And we know that, you know, Western alliances, you know, have, you know, with the US and Australia as a partner of the US, if they can highlight these atrocities and these, you know, the problematic behavior of, you know, the Western countries, then it gives China a sort of, I don't know, we're not as bad, basically, because we weren't involved in all of these wars. And I don't know, again, giving China's human rights record, which is egregious, from Xinjiang and the Uyghurs there, as you mentioned, Jen, but also in Hong Kong and Tibet and everywhere else. It's not really a case that holds water, but it's certainly a case that China will try to make to the world, I think. You know, we're not as bad as these guys that have been, you know, pillaging your country for 20 years type thing.
Yeah, you know, it's just there's a longstanding kind of tactic that we've seen, you know, of communist regimes. I mean, you can see this going back to the Cold War with the Soviet Union, you know, always trying to kind of push this line that, you know, they're the ones who are, you know, providing liberty and protection and all of this. And that, you know, it's the West that's trying to, you know, overturn your regimes and committing all these war crimes, which, again, to be fair, those things did happen, right? But they do this while at the same time completely obfuscating the fact that they are doing also horrendous things to their own people and to people where, you know, in regions where they're operating. And so, you know, it's kind of a longstanding playbook. Of course, again, you know, all countries do this to some degree, right? We also, you know, try to point out crimes and you know, human rights violations of other countries while not acknowledging our own. So that's fairly standard. But I think, you know, again, going back to the fact that this report exists, right? Like, China is still blocking, like, images of Tiananmen Square to this day on the internet and, like, not teaching its own citizens about what even happened there and trying to crack down on democracy in Hong Kong and all of that. So, yeah.
But I guess I just want to go back to sort of the issue at hand here because, like, let's be clear about why relations between China and Australia are getting bad, right? It is that China is like creating artificial islands in the South China Sea. It is trying to, you know, many intelligence agencies perceive using its telecommunications giants to spy on foreign countries. And it is refusing to allow inspectors and a real sort of reckoning as to what happened in the early days of the coronavirus. Like, these are bad things that China's doing.
Yeah.
And Australia, for being one of the regional leaders, is like calling China out on it in all these cases. And for that, you have China like starting a trade war with Australia and like, you know, hitting them on this war report, which again, Australian elite, you know, service members deserve, you know, scorn for this and the leaders that abetted it. But that's why this is happening, and it's backfiring because it is backfiring on Australia in a sense because now we're talking about their war crimes report that no one knew until like nowish. But it is backfiring on China because you're making it worse that because they're making like the U.S. for example really pay attention to what's going on there. You've had in the recent week the National Security Council with a admittedly childish tweet, basically being like, well, we're going to have wine at our Christmas parties and like, we know how to drink. Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. And like, that's actually in the tweet.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, yeah. You took it out of my story, but it was in the tweet.
I'm a mean editor. I take things out.
It happens. Yeah, but like that was the NSC's, like the official National Security Council tweet was like, we're going to drink Australian wine, Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. And then you had Jake Sullivan, who's going to be President-elect Biden's National Security Advisor with a much more sober, like, Australians are our friends, we will back them. Which, just as a side note, is an interesting change of, like, difference in tone between the two administrations.
Speaking of trolls going to troll, right?
Right. Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. Which I kind of just like as a hashtag and should be the official hashtag of Worldly going forward. You know, we're not Australian. But either way, that's what's sort of at stake here is you have China with a, you know, trolly tweet, yes, creating a stir over this war crimes report, but also like bringing America into this. And it's the last thing you want when you already know that a Biden administration is planning to be tougher on you, like going after a key ally and over, you know, something like this is not the way to ingratiate yourself and get off on the right foot.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to take a break. After the break, we're going to talk more about the kind of global ramifications of this China-Australia fight more broadly.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome back, Worldly listeners. We are talking about China and Australia and this somewhat bizarre diplomatic fight that started over a tweet, but that's actually about a whole bunch of other stuff. We were talking right before the break about, you know, how, Alex, you mentioned this isn't, you know, even though we've been talking about this war crimes report and what, you know, Australian soldiers allegedly did and why China is pointing this out and whether they have credibility to do so. But, you know, as we kind of touched on briefly, I want to get into this a little bit more. You know, it's really about a much broader kind of geostrategic fight that's going on between China and Australia, both in the military and I guess, you know, telecommunications as well, but mostly military and trade kind of realms. So, Jen, why don't you kind of lay that out a bit more for us?
Obviously, this is a dispute between Australia and China, but the big question is why should the rest of the world actually care about this particular fight? And I think it's because we're kind of seeing, you know, a little bit of hint of the future of geopolitics in real time. And what I mean is Australia, you know, stood up to China. It, you know, basically challenged them on their telecommunications by banning Huawei and ZTE before a lot of other countries did. They've stood up to China, at least rhetorically, when it comes to China's incursions in the South China Sea. And of course, now we're seeing China fight back. And what they're doing is they're using mostly their economic leverage by waging a pretty, you know, intense trade war with Australia, which is a big deal for Australia. China is a huge export market for the country. So unlike, say, the United States, and putting aside the pros and cons of Trump's China policy, the U.S. can, you know, much better absorb a trade war with China than, say, a power like Australia. And so this could have some pretty serious consequences. And so I think what we're seeing is China's strategy in real time to punish and pressure countries that it doesn't like, which is really using its economic leverage. And while Australia may be the first, there's nothing to say that they won't start doing this to other countries. So in reading some analysis of this fight, you know, a lot of experts were saying, well, Australia here, but next, you know, Berlin or, you know, London. And so this is sort of we're seeing China's, I don't know, playbook in real time of how it's going to basically bully countries who try to stand up to it a little bit.
Yeah, Jen, I think that's spot on. I think that's really important to understand, too, you know, especially when you think about, you know, the Belt and Road Initiative, right? So China has this kind of huge economic, diplomatic infrastructure kind of plan to develop, you know, both like literal infrastructure for trade, you know, with countries kind of from China all the way across to, you know, all the way to Eastern Europe, really, but also, you know, trade ties, political ties, even some military ties, you know, and kind of develop this huge, you know, sphere of influence, essentially. And I think what's really important there is, like, as you said, you know, it's one thing to develop these, you know, trade ties with China. China is a huge market, obviously. Companies around the world want to do business there. But at the same time, you know, the deeper you get, you know, these ties, right, the closer bound economically in particular you get to China, the more leverage it therefore has, you know, over you to punish you if you do something it doesn't like, right? And so I think that's what, you know, what we're seeing with Australia is if you want to speak up about bad things China is doing, they have a lot of leverage to punish you. And so I think, you know, it's really deeply concerning from a, you know, human rights kind of standpoint and from a, you know, kind of global order. I know it's such a boring, like, think tanky word, but, you know, in terms of, you know, being able to have kind of rules of the game, China is really good at, you know, twisting the system to work for itself. And I think, you know, it being a bully, we've seen this in Africa. We talked about this on the show before, you know, with China basically going into countries in Africa and developing infrastructure and things like that. And then saying, you know, oh, if you want economic relief, you know, now if you want debt relief, during the COVID pandemic, like, sure, but you have to give us mineral rights or you have to give us X, Y, and Z, right? So using its kind of its power and its ties and its leverage to extract concessions from countries. And I think that's deeply concerning from a, you know, a global standpoint.
Have we talked about wolf warrior diplomacy yet?
No. What's that, Alex?
Oh, it's my favorite thing. So there's a nationalist film that's like in China, and it's just a series of films called Wolf Warrior. And the main thing you need to know about it is that it's like, I don't know, like, there's an American equivalent, but I always think of like Rambo in a way. Like, it's almost just like a super American, like, go in there, be tough, you know, show how great America is, get the bad guys, all that kind of stuff, which is definitely how I would describe Rambo. but like, it has become a bit of a cultural phenomenon in a way. A lot of Western analysts talk about what China's been doing, and it's effectively like just an unabashed sense of nationalism. China's great. This is who we are. You know, show China's greatness and also attack others' weakness. And this is the kind of ideology that Zhao Lijian, who sent out that tweet, ascribes to. He's consistently called in in media as a wolf warrior diplomat because he ascribes to this viewpoint of China. And we're seeing that playbook happen on Twitter and even somewhat in real life at the foreign ministry. When you have spokespeople, actually someone asked a spokesperson at the Chinese foreign ministry about this Australia-China spat, and Hua Chunying, who is one of the main spokespeople, was like, how dare Australia be upset about this? Like, Afghan lives matter, and like, they are bad and we are good.
Wait, they used Afghan lives matter?
They did.
Wow. Talk about trolling. I mean, they do, but also co-opting that slogan for, yeah, all right.
Right. So like, this is part of that game, right? Like, not basically taking like the online nationalist bully into real life diplomacy and like geopolitics. And that is the underlying message or the underlying play here when it comes to Australia. It is about China throwing its weight around, throwing its ideology around, its propaganda around in the almost the same way that Russia has been doing it for a long time. I remember talking to an expert a couple months back at the start of the pandemic about it was an interesting trend of like China trying to block everyone blaming China for the rise of the coronavirus by being like, well, you guys suck and you guys are bad. And also, you know, putting out a bunch of misinformation. In fact, China was saying that it started, that the coronavirus started in America, right? That was one of the initial claims. And what this expert told me was they have basically borrowed the Russian playbook, that China has changed its style on online messaging and even in real life messaging and just kind of doing whataboutism. And in, you know, going after the weaknesses of its adversaries, in pushing a nationalist message online and you know, reverence for the leader. And so this is new. Like, this is all part of a new play of this wolf warrior diplomacy that we're seeing in real time. And Australia is currently bearing the brunt of it. And so, of course, China has an easy target here with Australia with this really gruesome, troubling report.
What's interesting, though, to me, in comparing it to the Russia example, you know, Russia is really good at this kind of Twitter trolling, at this online kind of, and even just, in real life and, in the media and in press conferences, but this kind of really pugnacious, really bellicose kind of rhetoric. But I think what's interesting and what's different with China is that China actually has this like huge economic might behind it. So it's not just that. Like, Russia has very little leverage in that space. They have a huge nuclear arsenal and they've got some oil and some oil pipelines. But beyond that, they're in no way comparable in terms of China, in terms of like a trade and, export markets and things like that. Like, China is, the number two economy in the world. And so they have a lot of heft behind that. And I think that's what's kind of extra concerning is that, by adopting this kind of, really aggressive diplomatic kind of, nationalist strategy, yes, they're copying the Russia example, but they're also using it, they're throwing real weight behind it. They're throwing actual policies and trade wars and things like that behind it. And that's what I think, to me, makes it, even more concerning than Russia's kind of malign activities online, as we like to say.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Jen. And I mean, part of the reason Russia has to do the online trolling is because they don't have the economic leverage. When I was doing a lot of reporting on, potential election interference, a lot of experts told me, China doesn't need to, make fake accounts on Twitter because they can literally just be like, hey, Wall Street, I'm gonna, or hey, Hollywood. And they have, hey, NBA, they have leverage there that Russia just doesn't have. So, Russia is more of an asymmetric warfare if you want to kind of go that route, whereas China just can do it out in the open. They can say, hey, I'm going to put tariffs on one of your biggest, exports and good luck to you, sir. And I think the other thing is, but where China is not quite as good as Russia, and I think this is kind of why this has turned into a diplomatic spat, is that they're not quite as good at hitting the pressure points in a way that Russia is. Like, China just doesn't have, they're getting there, they're getting better, but they still make missteps. Like, the Afghan Lives Matter is kind of a, if you understand, the origins of Black Lives Matter, that's a pretty choppy kind of clumsy way of putting it, right? And so that's why they're getting attention, because they're kind of being so over the top in their propaganda, and that, allows it to kind of gain oxygen and national tension, and is why the National Security Council in the United States and our other allies in the UK and New Zealand are also paying attention to what China is saying online. And Alex, as you said earlier, in the first half, like, China did make a mistake because they did this so openly and in the public, it got everyone's attention. And I think that's sort of the key is, can we take this trolly online behavior, you know, the NSC tweeting, you know, Aussie, Aussie, whatever it is. I'm not as familiar with the phrase as you are, Alex, but can they actually sort of, can the, you know, the Five Eyes, which of course is Australia, the US, Canada, New Zealand, and the UK, but other Western allies, can we kind of create a united front to so when China starts to bully Australia, everybody kind of gets together and doesn't just, you know, fight back rhetorically, but actually kind of unilaterally puts pressure back on China. And I think if there is a pathway forward to that, then potentially that could be a check on some of China's using its economic leverage to wreak havoc on less powerful countries.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Jen. You know, Aussie, 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 oi, 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 and saying we're going to be drinking Australian wine, you know, tweet is one thing, but like, you know, is there policy behind that, right? Like, could the US theoretically, you know, do something to help boost, you know, Australian, you know, exports to the US to help, you know, or the other kind of allied countries to kind of help offset some of the economic pain from China? You know, and I think you're right. Like, in terms of, you know, these close alliances, it's one thing if it's like a, you know, local diplomatic spat between China and Australia. But when you start, you know, really messing economically, you're going to bring in the United States and you're going to bring in these kind of other economic powers that will be able to actually fight back with, you know, comparable heft with China. So I think, you know, they definitely have a bit to learn in terms of wolf warrior diplomacy, even if that's their new thing. You know, maybe a little bit more diplomacy and a little less wolf warrior would be appropriate here.
Although I may say, I mean, first of all, Kirby, you need to start drinking with more Australians.
There are always so many, but yet I never encounter them.
Gotta say, it's more often than not a phenomenal night. I do feel like what China and learning from Russia and others have figured out is that it's really hard for governments to respond to trolling, like, but from officials, right? Because they are official government statements, even if they are trolls. And you sort of have to respond to it. I mean, it is a trolly Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson getting Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison to respond and say, like, they should apologize. This is bad. Even in the U.S., when we have Trump, like, you know, spouting off conspiracy theories, it gets other countries and even, you know, us in the media to respond. We haven't figured out, in general, the royal we, how to deal with trolls and disinformation and how it comes out. And China's figured that out. They know that they can put out a, you know, tweet out a doctored computer-generated image and get all of Australia and Vox.com, you know, get all of Australia riled about it, get Vox.com to write an explainer on it, do an entire podcast on it. And, like, this is because we wouldn't be having this conversation if Zhao Lijian hadn't tweeted out that image, right? We wouldn't.
Right.
So that is a challenge, is how do we, and I don't have any answers, I'm just here spouting off a question, but it is astounding to me in a sense that we are now in a world where government officials are trolls, and can put off statements like this. And we just kind of have to find a way to deal with it. I mean, they have ramifications to the point that Australia's request in the earlier part of the year to say, hey, there should be an investigation into what happened with the coronavirus in China. It's a genuinely fine request. You might think it's too harsh or whatnot. I think it's a completely normal and good thing to ask for. And like that started this whole thing. It's causing economic ramifications and causing a whole spat. And part of it is because you have Twitter trolls working for the government in Beijing being like, no, how dare you? And I find this to be just perhaps the biggest problem that's still weirdly under discussed and undercovered.
I think that's a good place to leave it. We don't know what to do with Twitter trolls who are also government officials. Thank you both. I want to thank all of you for listening and encourage you all to rate, subscribe, and review Worldly wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.